Chapter 17. If there was one thing Hammond hated more than watching his basketball team lose on those rare occasions when he actually got to see them play, it was rearguard duty. To make matters worse, he was left with Wheels for company, who was about as much use as... well, he couldn't even come up with a close comparison. He leant against the side of the van, listening to the rain on its roof. It sounded like a major downpour was on the way, a downpour he had no intention of being caught in. He walked round to the rear of the van, where he found Wheels inside checking over his gun. Rookies, nothing but an accident waiting to happen. "Hey, Wheels," he said, leaning through the open van doors. Wheels sat bolt upright, waving his gun in Hammond's direction. "Get that weapon out of my face, boy!" "Sorry, Hammond, I must have..." "Let's get one thing straight. I ain't interested in being your daddy or your long-lost birdie, you get me, boy?" Hammond leaned in further, allowing Wheels to see the expression on his face. "I'll make a deal with you. You don't screw up before the others get back, and I won't gut you like a fish. Deal?" Wheels nodded sharply. "Good," said Hammond, satisfied his point had been made. "Now, I'm going to check the alleyway again. You stay put and stay alert." Without another word, Hammond set off, slowly making his way down the alleyway. His eyes took in every rooftop, every window, anywhere someone could conceal themselves. The prospect was unlikely, but he also knew unlikely prospects were the sort of thing that earned you a bullet in the ass. Hammond moved further down the street, past the last run-down apartment building, until he reached the bottom of the alley. At this point, the alley opened out into a much wider street. All he saw, looking around, were a few tramps and hookers, nothing to worry about. The rain was beginning to fall by this time, and he decided Wheels could take the next turn as sentry. Why should he get himself and his equipment soaked when there was a rookie he could exploit? Smiling at the idea, he started back to the van. He stopped when he was halfway and turned into the alcove of a small shop. The flashing neon sign above the shop read Sam's Cafe, although this was not clear at first, as several of the letters had ceased to flash. Hammond placed his rifle up against the wall and moved his hands down to his trouser zip. He thought it best to relieve himself now before the rain got too heavy. As he stood there, he became aware of the sensation of being watched. Tilting his head slightly to the right, he gave the impression of scratching his nose. His suspicions were confirmed when he caught a glimpse of a laser sight resting on the wall in front of him, before it lurched left and disappeared. There was no doubt in Hammond's mind the sight was now fixed on the base of his skull. As he planned his next move, the heavens opened and sheets of rain poured down onto the street, accompanied by a flash of lightning. Hammond reacted instantly. 15 years in the military were not about to end in an alley. He dived to his left, snatched the rifle, and as he fell, he twisted in midair to face his attacker, the anticipated gunfire harmlessly clattering against the wall. He landed hard on his side and slid down the rain-soaked street, his gun blasting away at the flash of gunfire coming from across the street on one of the building's fire escapes. Hammond was peppered with rainwater and pavement chippings as automatic weapons fire tore into the street around him. Luckily, the downpour was making it difficult for his attacker to get a clear shot at him. Vaulting to his feet, Hammond sprinted back the way he had come, firing up at the fire escape as he ran. He caught a glimpse of someone running along the fire escape, but his bullets were unable to find their mark. Upon reaching the end of the fire escape, the figure leapt over the rail. The attacker leveled their gun and fired, catching Hammond high in the chest, catapulting him through a shop window and into the darkness beyond. Despite landing hard, Steph's only injury was a slight twinge of pain as she rested her weight onto her right leg. She switched on the torch attached to the underside of her gun and pointed it to where she had seen the big man fall. Cautiously she edged forward, the torch cutting a path through the rain. The sound of broken glass underfoot greeted her ears, and she stopped in front of what remained of the shop window. Steph moved inside and cast her light over the unmoving body covered in glass. She moved closer, making sure the laser sight was kept trained on his forehead. Kicking the gun out of the man's right hand, she knelt beside him. She placed two fingers against his throat and felt for a pulse. His overconfidence cost him his life. Steph turned to see a young man, who the dead man had called Wheels, barring her exit from the shop. "Stand fast, soldier," she ordered, training her gun on Wheels. "Let me see those hands. Impressive reflexes, Stephanie. Can I assume if you're here, then Benjamin has either already escaped or is somewhere in the vicinity? Which is it?" "This is the part where you offer me my life in exchange for Ben and the disc, right?" "You misunderstand me, Stephanie. I have no intention of allowing either of you to live. My employers were very specific on that." "And your employers are?" Wheels smiled malevolently. "You're not ready for that kind of truth. Now where is the disc?" "You're forgetting who's holding the gun. Not at all. Wheels lunged at Steph, who unloaded several rounds into his chest. She heard the bullets tear through cloth, then skin. Wheels staggered back a few steps, his advance halted. She then watched as the wounds sealed themselves as if the skin had never been broken. "What the hell are you?" she said at last, realizing the question was probably the most understated phrase she had ever uttered. "Your executioner," said Wheels, grabbing her by the throat. His fingers began to stretch, tearing the skin to reveal claws where his hands had once been. He hefted Steph over his head with one arm and threw her as if she weighed nothing. Steph hit the pavement hard on the far side of the street. As she spat out a mouthful of blood, she felt a stabbing pain in her ribs and guessed one of them was badly bruised, perhaps broken. The warm sensation moving down the right side of her head told her she was bleeding. She touched her jaw. It was not broken, but it hurt like a bitch. She looked across at the shop window and saw Wheels step out into the street. Steph pulled herself up, looked at her gun, and then tossed it away. "That's the first sensible thing you've done, Stephanie." The clever combatant imposes his will on the enemy, but does not allow the enemy's will to be imposed on him. Sun Tzu. Forcing a defiant grin, Steph reached into her jacket. She produced a combat knife in one hand and a small metal tube in the other. Flicking her wrist downward, the tube extended like a telescope and locked itself into place. It now resembled a police baton. Wheels advanced towards Steph, matching her smile with one full of malice and dark intent. The good fighters of old first put themselves beyond the possibility of defeat, and then waited for an opportunity of defeating the enemy. To secure ourselves against defeat lies in our own hands, but the opportunity of defeating the enemy is provided by the enemy himself. Thus the good fighter is able to secure himself against defeat, but cannot make certain of defeating the enemy. Sun Tzu. A sense of calm settled over Steph's mind. An impossible battle against an enemy more powerful than herself was not a new position for her. Yes, bullets were no good, but he breathed the same air as she did, and that meant he could be killed. Only one of them would leave the alley alive, and Steph planned on it being her. If he is secure at all points, be prepared for him. If he is in superior strength, evade him. Sun Tzu. Wheels came in fast and hard. Steph was ready. Her opponent was arrogant and overconfident, relying on brute strength to win the day. She ducked under the first blow, recovering in time to deflect Wheels' clawed hand with her baton, while slicing along his open palm with her blade. Her mind was honed on one thing, survival. She rolled right and came up into a kneeling position, her baton blocking Wheels as he smashed down with both hands. The pain from the blow and the power behind it was unbelievable, but Steph buried it. She slashed out at Wheels' midriff, span round and smashed the baton into his spine, slamming him into the wall behind her. Wheels looked down at the 6-inch gash now running along his stomach. Steph stood. Her knife was now stained with a black and sticky liquid she guessed was the creature's blood. Wheels came forward again, only this time more cautiously. Steph knew he would not be so cocky now she had drawn blood. "You cannot win, human," Wheels told her. "Throw down your weapons and your death will be quick." In battle, there are not more than two methods of attack, the direct and the indirect, yet these two in combination give rise to an endless series of manoeuvres. Sun Tzu. Steph did not answer. She was studying her opponent's every movement, no matter how subtle. She saw his right shoulder tense and at once knew what was coming. She dropped to the floor in a split position, leaving Wheels swinging at thin air. The direct and the indirect lead on to each other in turn. It is like moving in a circle, you never come to an end. Who can exhaust the possibilities of their combination? Sun Tzu. Steph's baton cracked against Wheels' right knee, whilst burying her dagger deep into his left. Wheels howled in pain, the sound unlike anything Steph had ever heard. Wheels dropped onto his ruined knees before Steph, who had produced a second dagger. "You think to kill me, girl? I have existed since before..." "Please," said Steph, plunging the dagger into his throat. "Give it a rest." Instead of finishing him off, the strike only seemed to anger Wheels further. He leapt onto Steph, his hands clamped around her throat. Steph headbutted him, grabbed the dagger lodged in his throat, and pushed down on it with what little strength she had left. She could feel herself slipping away and Wheels' grip around her throat grow tighter. "Tell me where the disc is." "Screw you!" As Steph's vision began to give way to a tiredness from which she knew there would be no waking, a crossbow bolt buried itself deep within Wheels' left temple. He screamed, causing Steph to clamp her hands over her ears before he disintegrated before her eyes. For what seemed like an age, Steph lay on her back covered in black ash, breathing hard. She did not say anything. She just stared up at the night sky and took a moment to fully appreciate that she was still alive. A gloved hand extended towards her, which she grasped, and it pulled her to her feet. She stumbled, but was supported by another gloved hand. Looking into the man's face, she saw not only a hardness born of a deep-seated ruthlessness she knew only too well, but also a sincere look of concern. "You sure know how to make an entrance, Reverend," she smiled weakly at the man, whose real name she had never discovered. "Thanks." The Reverend nodded, wearing his usual distant, almost uninterested expression, made more pronounced by his gaunt and weather-beaten face. "It's good to see you again, Steph," said the Reverend. He cast an inquiring eye over the remains of wheels still covering Steph's clothes. "I would be grateful if you could tell me what I just killed." "Right now, Rev, I know about as much as you do," she said, dusting the ash from her clothes. She bent down and retrieved her gun. "I know nothing." "Like I said, as much as I do. How did you know where its weak spot was?"
"Because I placed the thought inside his limited and somewhat disturbed mind," a voice said.
The Reverend and Stephanie moved as one, each of them making the decision to shoot first, identify bodies later. Steph, who was still kneeling, span and fired. The Reverend mirrored her actions with his Uzi pistols. Some distance away in the middle of the street was their intended target, a man dressed in an immaculate, charcoal-colour three-piece suit and an unbuttoned black raincoat did not flinch. The bullets did not strike him. Instead, they paused in front of him as if considering their next move before flying around him and continuing on their original path.
"Impossible," said the Reverend.
"State the bloody obvious, why don't you?" yelled Steph, still firing. The man strode towards them, each step measured, his hands clasped behind his back. The raincoat he wore now resembled a cloak as it flowed out behind him. Closer now, Steph was able to get a better look at him, the tailored suit, the neatly combed dark brown hair, the expensive-looking footwear. This was someone who took great pride in his appearance, and he expected others to notice the effort. Apart from an expensive taste in clothing, there was nothing unusual about the man's appearance. He was attractive, in a clean-cut, older man kind of way, not Steph's usual type, as he looked old enough to be her father. There was, nevertheless, something unsettling about him, though she put that down to his little trick with the bullets.
"Please lower your weapons."
The man's voice radiated power. Steph hesitated, unsure what to do next.
"I will not ask you a second time."
The voice boomed through Steph's mind, blocking out all other thoughts. She dropped her gun at once. The Reverend also relinquished his weapons, no doubt the result of a similar mental tongue-lashing, she guessed. The man stared at the discarded weapons and sighed.
"Never ceases to amaze me just how many new and more efficient ways we can find to take another life."
"How do you do that?" said Steph. "How do you get inside my head?" The man smiled.
"Well, it was not difficult. There was a lot of space for me to fill."
Steph disregarded the man's attempt at humour. Invading her mind was not something she found funny. To be honest, right now she did not know what she thought about it. "I don't suppose you'd like to tell us what the hell is going on, and while you're about it, who the hell you are?
And perhaps you could explain how it is the gunfire has no effect on you," added the Reverend. "Perhaps it was a miracle, Jonathan," the man said quietly. "You still believe in those, don't you? Or have you forgotten that, as well as the commandments you conveniently misplace each time you take another life?"
For the first time since she had known him, Steph saw shock on the Reverend's face. She guessed it was a relatively new experience for him, too. It was also the first time she had heard someone call him anything other than Reverend.
"How do you know my name?"
"Hmm," mused the strange man. He turned and pointed at Steph.
"That's one what and one who from Stephanie, and two hows from Jonathan. I hope you don't mind being called Jonathan. I cannot abide nicknames, and the Reverend seems rather silly, don't you think?"
The Reverend said nothing. The man clapped his hands together and began rubbing them as if trying to banish the cold night air.
"Well, let's see. What? Who? How? Yes, all good questions. Perhaps if you started with good solid questions like those, I would not have had to have resort to such cheap theatrics to get your attention."
He raised an eyebrow at them both.
"No matter. Well, the what and the two hows are best left for a more appropriate time. But the who I can definitely answer." My name is Joshua Gray.